Hey everybody, welcome back to Cold Case Murder Mysteries. I'm your host Ryan Krause, back in the driver's seat once again to take you inside the darkness of the human mind. In this episode, we're taking a look at the shocking death of 29-year-old South African model Reeva Steenkamp, who died at the hands of her 26-year-old boyfriend, Oscar Pistorius, known as Blade Runner, who rose to international fame and fortune after competing in the 2012 Olympic Games with prosthetic lower legs. Now, just to be clear, I'm going to check out the psychological narrative here, and so I'll allow the rest of you to look at the factual elements elsewhere because they have been examined exhaustively in other places. On the night of February 14th, 2013, Valentine's Day, the doting couple, who had been together 4 months as part of a whirlwind romance, suddenly met tragedy. At some point during the night, an incident occurred in which Oscar shot Reeva 4 times as she stood behind a bathroom door in the master bedroom suite of Oscar's Pretoria, South Africa home. In the aftermath, Pistorius claimed it was a tragic accident and that he believed Reeva was an intruder. Yet the forensic evidence and witness testimony suggest that perhaps something more sinister was at play. So did Oscar Pistorius murder Reeva Steenkamp in a passionate rage due to relationship issues? Or was it, like he said, an accident? Let's take a look at the psychological narrative at hand in this episode. But first, I want to give a huge thanks to my Patreon supporters and others who support the show through donations on coldcasemurdermysteries.com. I was able to buy a desk chair last month that has left me climbing the part of the evolutionary chart where the primates start to go upright into humans, so this is definitely progress. And as always, your 5-star ratings wherever you listen go a long way in helping others find the show. Thanks for all you do. Okay, so a little information about our couple. Reeva Steenkamp was originally from Cape Town, South Africa, and earned a Bachelor of Laws degree, which would be the closest equivalent to a JD here in the US. At the completion of university, Reeva worked as a paralegal, but found greater success in the profession of modeling. She applied for the bar in 2011 and had intended to be a legal advocate by age 30. Tragically, she didn't make it, but for all intents and purposes, Reeva seemed to have the best of everything, meaning brains and beauty. She began modeling around age 14, and by the time of her death, had been the official face of Avon in South Africa, along with appearing as a cover girl for FHM, in addition to doing work for Toyota. TV opportunities followed, and sadly, a reality show in which she had participated, called Tropica Island of Treasure, aired 3 days after her death. Meanwhile, Oscar Pistorius originally hails from Johannesburg, South Africa, and was born with a congenital condition leading to the absence of parts of his outer feet and lower legs, requiring a double amputation of those legs below the knees at 11 months old. Now, here's where we get to the start of what becomes Oscar's emotional wound, the thing that will drive him to compensate, to fill the hole, so to speak, on what is missing. Oscar was very close to his mother as a boy, and from the outside looking in, it seems that she was the one who enabled him, so to speak. Not entitled, but enabled. For instance, if Oscar's brother or kids in the neighborhood were going out to play, then Oscar was expected to do the same activities and by way of adapting to accommodate. So there was never a time when this double amputee was anything less than an athlete. Oscar played rugby, worked out at a boxing gym, and also competitively indulged wrestling, tennis, and water polo. So when Sheila died in 2002, Oscar was crushed and often dedicated moments to her in his athletic career, along with getting a tattoo citing her birth and death dates. Unfortunately, while Oscar used sports as a way of coping with her passing, the next year he suffered a major knee injury. His doctors informed him that he would do well to forego the rugby moving forward and begin track running as a means of competing in something more suitable to recovery. So he did that, and the rest is history. Within a decade, not only would he medal in the Paralympic Games, but would compete against able-bodied athletes in the 2012 Olympic Games, taking him to the top of the sport. While some saw his prosthetic blades as an unfair advantage, marketing teams around the world saw the opportunity to sell the idea of overcoming adversity. What followed was sponsorships with companies like Nike and Oakley. It's estimated that, in his last full year of sponsorship prior to Riva's death, meaning 2012, he accumulated in excess of $2 million USD. His life was truly the stuff of dreams. Even before the pinnacle of his success, in 2008, Pistorius was named one of Time magazine's most influential people. Another man on that list, Eric Weinmeier, who was the first blind person to climb Mount Everest, had this to say of Blade Runner, quote, "He's on the cusp of a paradigm shift in which disability becomes ability, disadvantage becomes advantage, yet we mustn't lose sight of what makes an athlete great. It's too easy to credit Pistorius' success to technology. Through birth or circumstance, some are given certain gifts, but it's what one does with those gifts, the hours devoted to training, the desire to be the best, that is at the true heart of a champion." End quote. To prove him correct, Oscar made the list again in 2012, and we can see within this idea that technology is the bridge between what we are and what we're becoming as a species. The ironic presentation of disability or disadvantage becoming advantage is facilitated through what? Absence. So, unless Oscar is missing those legs and or the ability to use them, then we don't have the capacity to engineer technological solutions beyond the flesh and blood we currently employ in that endeavor. And so you can see how that applies to our emotional lives as well, because they are what's going to drive the desire to change. So any disability, whether defined as deficiency or absence, is a technological gap that will ultimately be filled. We're seeing the same thing right now with trans people entering women's athletics. Women are like, how am I supposed to compete against people who are essentially still men biologically, or at least partially so? That unfair advantage, so to speak, will drive women to transform to compensate. And of course, that will happen over a long period of time, and in between, everyone will have to suffer the transformation and the fallout from the things that drive it. That's what it takes. So if you see a man with no legs running faster than most of the world, a frightening reality comes to bear, which is that, quite simply, machines are superior. But in order to get to these places of technological ascension, again, we start with holes in the form of absence. And as much of a toll as they take on an individual physically, in the form of disability or deficiency, the emotional fight is even that much harder. That's awful because, as we know with mental illness, it's an invisible disability. Even if a person is suffering, a veil can be placed over it. So here's what Oscar's mom wrote to him as an infant. Quote, "The real loser is never the person who crosses the finishing line last. The real loser is the person who sits on the side, the person who does not even try to compete." End quote. Now, if she wrote that to him at 11 months prior to his surgery, you'd have to imagine there would be more. And Oscar tells us that his mom wrote him hundreds of such letters over the years. Hundreds. When he qualified for the 2012 Olympic Games, he said, quote, "I thought about my mother a lot today. She was a bit of a hardcore person. She didn't take no for an answer." End quote. Oscar also paraphrased his mom's ideology with this, quote, "She always said the loser isn't the person that gets involved and comes last, but it's the person that doesn't get involved in the first place." End quote. Oscar's mom also told him to play as many sports as possible and never give up. He also said about her, quote, "She didn't really comply with much and had a very carefree approach to life. She didn't take anything too seriously. She wrote us hundreds of letters and taught us hundreds of things and never made decisions for us." Those are important lessons. When you try to do things sometimes and you don't succeed and you give up, and you never really know what the potential could have been if you had stayed dedicated to something. End quote. I could go on and on with examples, but just from these alone, it's obvious that Oscar's mom, even from the time he was a baby, overcompensated in her pursuit of teaching her son to never quit in terms of physicality, because the deficiency from which her emotional wound was born was one in which she was going to be taking something from Oscar physically with that surgery. That's when the first letter started. His mom and dad were the ones who decided to amputate before he could walk in order to allow the prosthetics to be as natural as possible and limit the trauma, which was a good move, but at the same time, his mom being the person who made that decision to take something physically from Oscar made her the person who was left with a desperate need to try to fill it before he even had the opportunity to mature and do it himself. So Oscar grows up understanding that he can overcome his physical limitations through persistence and dedication, which in terms of physical exertion in athletics leading to success is 100% the correct way to go. On the track, you want to leave people in the dust. In tennis, you want to keep them from scoring against you, and so on. But off the field, in our hearts, there is a world in which never letting go and being persistent without limits or boundaries is scary. You can't expect to be that person in your emotional life and find the same success. Now, watch the shift in Oscar's physical output upon his mother's death and how it relates to his emotional disposition. Before her death, Oscar engages confrontational sports. Tennis pits you against another person. Rugby places a team on the other side of the pitch. Boxing forces you to face a combatant. Even water polo has you facing off against an opposing side coming at you. But running is an individual sport in which, yes, you certainly compete, but the goal is to leave the competition behind rather than stay with them. So Oscar's mentality as a runner dictated that he, under no circumstances, wanted to get left behind. Notice he makes a switch to that sport right after his mother's tragic early death at age 43, which specifically does what? Leaves Oscar behind in the dust. He can't catch up to her. She's gone. He can't have her back, and that hurts. So when he finds love with another woman to replace her and has been taught to never get left behind by someone who ironically did it to him, what do you think this runner with a desire to never let that happen is going to do in a situation in which, instead of never giving up physically, he has to let go emotionally? Well, quite simply, he's not going to allow it to happen. Since he doesn't know how to accommodate the situation emotionally, he's going to manifest a solution physically. It's all he's ever known. And it's because of his mother's overcompensation in terms of his physical disadvantage. She was concerned about physicality because, of course, she was the one who made the decision to take those legs, even though it needed to be done. So Oscar does not want to feel the hurt of another woman he loves leaving him, and he has justified usage of physicality to compensate simply because Mom said it was okay. Now, Mom didn't intend to teach him that corrupted version, of course, but her emotional wound of taking something from him physically with no option to get it back means that she will desperately try to teach him how to not lose in life through physicality. Think about what his mother was to him emotionally. She was one of two parents, his mom and dad, who provided what? Support. So when his mom dies, what happens? One of those two support systems is gone. Now, right afterward, what happens to his knee? He injures it badly. And what does that mean? One of his physical support systems on his body is gone, one of the two. The other remains, but it's not enough. It's not the same, because it's the other one that hurt you. So he has an imbalance and needs to compensate, but since he doesn't have the emotional fortitude, his inability to do so will manifest physically to tell us what he's really doing emotionally. Accordingly, when Oscar loses that support, both in the form of his knee and his mother, what does he begin to do obsessively? Run. So he ran from the pain of a woman leaving him, and of course, with his mother dead, that physical manifestation means what? He is literally now leaving her behind instead of the opposite. He doesn't have an emotional option for leaving her behind. So guess what? When he falls in love with Reva and she tries to leave, he won't have the emotional strength or ability to let go, because it means that she is going to leave him behind. She's going to leave him in the dust. And that's not okay. Oscar has to be the winner. Obviously, it means that if he wants to move forward like he did physically instead of emotionally after his mom's death, there is no other option than Reva dying. If she dies, she can't leave him behind. And he will not accept her leaving him behind. He does not know how to deal with that emotionally. If he tried to use running to cure Reva leaving him behind, like he did with his mom, it would still be true that Reva left him behind. If you can't let go, then you have to kill the person. And if your mother has taught you to never sit the sidelines and always compete, you will. Oscar was never taught to let go because his mother was obviously afraid that the psychology of doing so would lend itself to physical weakness in the form of quitting and unwillingness in her son. But there is this thing in life called love, and while it's not competition, at least not by traditional standards, it is something where second place hurts a lot. Getting left behind hurts. It might sting to see another competitor's back during a race you're losing, but the pain of someone leaving you behind romantically is something much greater. And you have to be prepared for it. You have to be willing to deal with it emotionally. It's just not another way. Now, if you're an Olympic caliber track runner and male, what is it, in a literal sense, that you never want to do on the track? Easy. Let another man win. But if Reva, a gorgeous and intelligent young woman, leaves him, what will happen? Another man will win. Another man will be out in front of him, heading to the finish line first. Notice that he is not prepared for the emotional equivalent of all of the things his mother taught him physically, because there was an overcompensation of physicality to deal with the emotional wound of absence, both for her having taken the legs and Oscar being the one who lost them. So from a thematic standpoint, absence is the idea that will ultimately kill Reva. Not only that, but if she manifests the notion of absence in a way that physically manifests the emotional idea of his mother dying or leaving, Reva will die. Of course, we know Reva putting a physical barrier between herself and Oscar, in which she intended for him to be unable to get to her, was the final straw. It's a fact. This case isn't about Reva beyond the obvious implication of her suffering a tragic, violent fate, but is instead about Pistorius being haunted by his mother's death. And we see that early in the relationship, even though it only lasted 4 months before the shooting. Text messages between the two enlighten us to the idea that Reva was considered or judged in the framework of the Madonna whore complex, meaning that there was no middle ground on her behavior. She couldn't be human. She couldn't be a subject. She was objectified. So she was not permitted to be anything less than perfect, or else she was essentially a whore. So Here's where we get to Oscar manifesting the idea of men on the track arriving at the finish line before him and how it enrages him. Men who objectify women think of them as conquests rather than people with agency, and so Riva needs to be the equivalent of the finish line in the sense that Oscar wants nothing to do with the reality that other men have gotten there first. But they have. Worst, there have been plenty of them, which, for a track runner, obviously, has terrible symbolic implications, but is perfectly normal for a beautiful young woman in her life. Yet, in Oscar's mind, as he's manifesting an emotional idea and physicality, each time he hears about her being with another guy, it means he goes further and further toward the back of the line on the track and with her in terms of arriving first. Naturally, if you get with a woman today, it means that every man she's been with before you arrived at the finish line first, so to speak, before you did. And that's why emotional maturity matters. Love is not a race to the finish line. It isn't a competition. But if you haven't matured to be able to indulge that idea, then what you're going to substitute is paranoia about other men getting out in front of you. Of course, that's what happens with Oscar. His affection for Riva slowly morphs into the need to control even the potential for another man to surpass him. So as the relationship blossoms, and as always happens, the parties reveal more and more truth about who they are, Oscar, hearing these stories, becomes jealous, controlling, and angry. Riva, of course, is taken aback by these traits because the jealousy and paranoia are baseless. She isn't with another man, and the ones she had been with were part of her past. The corrupted standard for who she should be was formulated in Oscar's emotional life and by way of deficiency leading to being unable to let go. So what we understand is that the only way this relationship could end is by way of binary necessity requiring Riva to let go emotionally, followed by Oscar refusing the same physically, giving us two halves of the same whole in the form of an emotional trait opposing its projected physical equivalent to bring balance. So let's bring that narrative into the crime scene now and examine the implications of such an incident unfolding. We're going to Oscar's house. The crime scene in question is the second floor master bedroom suite. Let's go through the layout. Let's start the tour by standing on the balcony because that's essentially where Pistorius was when his version of events transpired. Now, we're standing on the second floor balcony outside. There's a railing behind us and double doors framed with glass in front. If we open those doors and step inside, this is where the bed is located, off to the right, with the headboard against the wall and centered between the near and far walls. Oscar sleeps on the right side of this bed, nearest the door, and Riva sleeps on the left. Notice the subconscious decision for Oscar to sleep between Riva and the door to the outside in relation to his emotional wound. In fact, later in the night, when she crosses the threshold of a doorway to escape him, he kills her for doing it. The emotional idea is that she is not allowed to escape, because that's the same as somebody getting out in front of him in a race and leaving him in the dust, which correlates to the wound of losing his mother. Now, the far wall in the main bedroom area only extends halfway across the room, perhaps as far as the bed goes out from the wall, because the area beyond, meaning the hallway, is lined with large wardrobes. This also serves as a walkway leading to the bathroom area in back. Passing the wardrobes, we then turn right into the bathroom. Here we have a large room with a big tub positioned in the far left corner at the back of the room. Off to the right, in the far corner, is a separate little room for the toilet with its own door. The shower is to the right of the toilet, and double sinks are perpendicular to the shower against the wall outside it. So now that I've probably completely confused you with the layout, let's simplify it. Heading inward from the balcony, we have the bedroom area, then the wardrobe area, and then, finally, the bathroom area. Think of them as three acts consistent with birth, life, death, because, well, that's what they are. Remember, your physical reality is a symbolically constructed narrative designed to project the emotional life. So here the Big Bang will have to occur at the point of the balcony, meaning the inciting incident, and then Act 1, or birth of the incident, will transpire, meaning that the protagonist has to get out of bed, or aka wake up, and venture into the new world to do what? Change. So for Act 2, we go through the wardrobe area where people, you know, change. And because we live from the ego and not authentic identity, we must always change in search of new identity, and therefore we have multiple large wardrobes here with lots of changes of clothes. Now, the most important aspect of the necessary change in question will be stripping that facade of ego in order to undergo the cleansing of rebirth and disembodiment in the abyss. A symbolic rebirth of this sort is the process of deification through evolution. But when manifested in physicality by someone playing God instead of evolving to become that entity, what you end up with is tragic fate involving physical death rather than symbolic rebirth. There is no rebirth. So because the death stage is where we rise from the abyss, or conversely, go down into it, if we're talking about a tragedy, the final or third act is the bathroom in back, which contains the large tub, shower, and toilet. Now, a symbolic cleansing would happen in the tub or shower because those are, again, places of cleansing. But you don't cleanse yourself in the toilet bowl. Therefore, when nature or God constructs this tragic narrative and it leads to death rather than symbolic rebirth and there is no cleansing, Reva will die on the abyss of the toilet. It's telling Oscar, the tragic anti-hero, that there was no cleansing leading to rebirth, and we see that manifested in the fact she doesn't emerge from the toilet. She dies there physically instead of Oscar changing by letting go emotionally. You'll notice, during this crime, that when he goes past the wardrobes, he doesn't do what? Change. He doesn't shed the person he is in order to become someone new. And so, because that doesn't happen emotionally, we see it projected physically in the fact that he goes through the wardrobes without changing. So the cleansing is symbolic of what you need to leave behind in the form of your ego to become the authentic self, which is ultimately the body. Yet that's realized over a very long, slow emotional evolution leading to material technology to accommodate the changes. What the sociopath does, of course, is just use physicality as a shortcut, and that's what Oscar will do here. There is no evolution leading to symbolic death and rebirth, only physical death. And in tragic irony, we often physically kill the thing we care about most because we can't let it go emotionally. So as we move into Oscar's story, we should see evidence of this type of thing manifesting beginning with something that I've called the Red Giant. As I've talked about the Red Giant in terms of politics and evolution, perhaps an even more important context is how it occurs within us in our emotional lives. The Red Giant, quite simply, is a person losing their cool because in the universe, and in literal terms, a Red Giant is losing its ability to cool itself. So here, we should have an incident in which Oscar tells us right from the start that a red giant caused it. Here we go. It's a hot night, and Oscar says the air conditioning in his room was broken, so he turned it off. Already, we have our inability to cool. What this says to me, given the events to follow, is that Oscar, quite simply, lost his cool, which he was known to do. Now, obviously, that means some type of argument ensued, and given the past between the two, as evidenced by their texts, it stands to reason on this night that an argument would be comprised of two people losing their cool. Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. How well would you take care of your car if you had to keep the same one your entire life? Sounds daunting, right? You might just get a new one instead. Well, each of us only gets one brain, and it can't be traded in for the latest model, at least not yet, so nothing could be more important than taking care of the one we have. They constitute our path forward emotionally in everything we do, and how we care for our minds affects how we experience life. So it's important to invest time and care into keeping them healthy. There are plenty of ways to support a healthy brain, like learning a new language, or, in my opinion, listening to this show. But there's also BetterHelp online therapy. In my own experience as a busy professional, I've found therapy to be a very helpful outlet for stress that can make a significant impact on my psychological well-being in a relatively short period of time. And check this out. BetterHelp is online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat-only therapy sessions, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. And it's much more affordable than in-person therapy. You can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/CCMM. That's betterhelp.com/CCMM. So if a red giant loses its cool and subsequently expands outward, how would Oscar counteract that idea in physical projection? Well, you just reverse those values by bringing cooling inward. So if there's an argument going on and two people lose their cool, you need two objects to project cooling back inside. So Oscar gets two fans and takes them outside on the balcony, suggesting that the cool night air should blow inward. He points the fans inside the room. Now, these fans, again, are going to symbolize both Oscar and Riva and give us insight into Oscar's view of women, given his desire to control them. Now, Oscar is obviously the bigger star, and they're in this big house, which is his, and he wants to be a patriarchal figure to her, to stand over her, so to speak. So the tall fan standing on a pole, or Y-axis, or ascending axis, is Oscar, while the smaller, grounded fan, like the X-axis, is Riva. During our evolutionary ascension, the X or grounded axis is abandoned in favor of ascending along the Y, which is akin to our evolution across the Earth's surface. On a side note, our ascension directly upward into space, akin to the Z axis or vertical axis, is why the evil precipitating that technological revolution leading to that ascension was called Nazi, not Z. Talk more about that later. Women with their XX chromosomes are designed to undergo symbolic death along the X-axis through evolution to AI and extraction of sex or gender. So here, Riva is the grounded or floor fan as Oscar describes it. So what he's saying is that the two of them needed to cool off. Now, whatever he does next with those fans will tell us why that failed and led to Riva's death. He says he went outside during the night because things got too hot to leave both fans on the balcony, which tells us the argument got too heated and somebody couldn't cool down, or both. Now, in what way specifically? Well, if Riva is the grounded or floor fan and Oscar says he brought that inside because things got too hot and it needed to be closer to cool, then we understand that Riva endured the same in trying to cool him off. And of course, notice that he brings the fan back inside from outside, accommodating his paranoia about her getting away from him through those doors. Now, also notice that if Reva is that fan, he's physically bringing her back toward him in a situation in which she was obviously going away from him emotionally. He brings the fan back through the door, but when Reva is in the bathroom, he's not able to make it happen due to the fact that she cut him off emotionally, symbolized by the door being locked and shut. That's the distance in question as it relates to the fan. He wanted her to cool him off by coming back to him emotionally, so the fan shows us that narrative physically. And then notice what setup we have, which is the same as the murder scene. Oscar, the tall fan, so to speak, remains outside the door, and Reva, the grounded fan, is brought inside. When this incident ends, that's how Reva and Oscar are arranged in the bathroom. The tall fan, like Oscar, is symbolically guarding the door to make sure Reva, the grounded fan, inside the door, can't leave, manifesting his desire to keep her inside their relationship. He was not going to let her go. Now, when someone manifests a violent criminal act through sociopathy, what happens is that the shadow, similar to the description provided by Carl Jung, and specifically the dark half, comes up from the mirror universe, which is often represented by glass because it's a reflection of our emotional lives. The horrors break through the dark mirror universe or unconscious mind in the form of realization, and once realized by going through the doorway of the subconscious mind, represented by glass, transparency, or reflection, because it's the equivalent of the Holy Spirit or disembodiment, they can never go back or be unrealized. So the only way to submerge them in the abyss once again is through physically manifested measures. That means if Oscar had an emotional realization that Reva was going to leave him, then he would counter with a physical action designed to make her not ever leave him. So when you, the person that you are now in the light, can't accomplish something emotionally, you get stuck, which means that the darkness coming from the other end of the color scale is going to overtake you. It's a structural thing. Therefore, at the moment Oscar says he brought the fan inside, aka the moment he forced Reva to remain inside their relationship forever, symbolized by keeping her in the bathroom with no way out the door, he also tells us he heard a noise in the bathroom, aka the abyss. That's the realization. It's over. Oscar says he heard the sliding glass window at this moment outside the bathroom open and then shut, along with someone entering, someone he describes as an intruder. But he didn't see this person, ever. That's how the monster rises from the abyss. Bad thoughts intrude upon us, and they are specifically defined as those that threaten loss by way of changing who we are in favor of making us who we need to be. When you refuse emotional change, it simply manifests in tragic fate by way of physicality, often ending in death. So the straight line of evolution will manifest as the straight line of death instead, and it's here, in this moment, right on cue, that Oscar says he gets his gun. He couldn't get through to her emotionally, and so what he did was he got through to her physically, right through the door with the gun. Notice that the phantom intruder comes through the window, and then right away, Oscar gets his gun. Oscar and the intruder enter through binary glass sections or mirror universes in the form of the balcony doors and sliding window respectively, and at exactly the same time, because that's also the junction between our emotional and physical worlds. The intruder in darkness rising into the light is the unseen or unrealized version of you to come that hasn't yet had a face put to it or light put to it. It has literally not been applied to the light of consciousness. So it comes from darkness, and I refer to it as the shadow. Notice that just like that puts Oscar at one end and the intruder at the other, the transcendence point of change or wardrobe is the conduit between them by which they will merge. That's the idea here. The current version of Oscar in the light is going to give way to the new dark version rising into the light and requiring a merger with him to make the new identity whole, specifically meaning both emotional and physical. So Oscar is the physical aspect in the light, and the shadow or unseen intruder is the emotional aspect residing in darkness. That's why nobody ever sees him. As discussed with the color scale, the darkness merges into the light, and therefore, since that darkness equates to emotional change or realization that Reva wants to leave him, Oscar wants to kill that man, and by extension, Reva, who, by the end, become one and the same thing because they always were. Oscar says he believed he shot an intruder, but he really shot Reva. She was the physical projection of his emotional intruder, the person described as a burglar by Oscar because Reva was taking things away. She was taking her love away by leaving him, and because of the wound created by his mother and the lessons that his mother taught him, he could not let go and move on, because Reva was leaving him in the dust, ironically, just like his mother, who had taught him to never let it happen. When we don't allow ourselves to lose emotionally because we're conditioned to refusing to lose physically, then our options for letting go essentially don't exist. That darkness coming in the window under the guise of being a burglar precipitating loss is simply the symbolic rendering of the person Oscar was going to become. Again, notice that not at any point does he say that he saw an intruder. If you let go and merge with it and fight to eradicate that darkness emotionally in that battle along the color scale, you mature and subsequently heal through the cleansing of rebirth. But if you refuse it, it has to be killed. Oscar saw that darkness coming for him, meaning he saw himself being the person without Reva, and he did not want to merge with that identity moving into the future. So, as it came at him, he killed it, physically. And the idea is that if something rises from the abyss, meaning something is realized emotionally and can't be unrealized or undone and you can't deal with it, like a woman breaking up with you, then it has to be sent back down to the abyss physically in order to compensate and bring balance. That's the only way you can get her to not leave you, and accordingly, also the only way to prevent that intruder, so to speak, from becoming you, which is how those two end up being perceived as one and the same, like the intruder and Reva. In order to kill the intruder, you have to kill Reva, because her emotional decision is what manifested his existence. So in Oscar's story, he says he intended to shoot a person he thought was the intruder, but was really Reva. The intruder, of course, is simply the emotional component in the form of her decision, and so he is not present on the physical canvas in the bathroom because he only exists in Oscar's mind as the potential for the person he's going to become now that Reva has changed. Now, of course, what's obvious is that Oscar shot without looking to see who was back there. So in his version of events, beginning on the other end of the master bedroom suite, who do you think he's not going to look for when he gets his gun? Exactly. Reva. He never looks when he shoots her, and he never looks before that when he goes to get his gun. There is never a time in which he confirms in any way that Reva is safe, that she is in any certain place. And the fact of the matter is, he can't. So Oscar never looks to see where Reva is once he retrieves his gun. He only calls out to her. That's exactly what we're told happened on the other end when he killed her. His version of how this began is just a mirrored version of how it ended. So he says when the intruder entered, the first thing he thought to do was get his gun. Now, what that means is that when Reva broke up with him, he couldn't accept the new identity he was going to assume. He wanted to kill that, but the only way to do that was to prevent Reva from leaving, which, by way of ironic binary construction in the universe, means the only way to do that is to kill her. If he wanted to protect Reva, he would have located her upon realizing there was an intruder. But he never did. He didn't bother, simply because he couldn't. Any story in which Oscar first confirmed Reva was still in the bedroom with him before going into the bathroom with the gun would easily be proven a lie. If she was behind him, as is traditional in terms of protective measures, she couldn't be in front, and therefore also wouldn't be in the bathroom getting shot afterward. Anyone who has ever protected anything knows that the most integral part of doing so is knowing the location of that which you've been designed to protect. If you don't, your strategy is going to be worthless. So right here, Oscar betrays what is a very common and primal instinct in nature. You don't put those who you're protecting in front of you unless the danger is to the rear. You, as the protection, always act as the barrier. Always. So Oscar cruises through the wardrobe area with his gun extended, meaning that the gun is what he is going to use as a means of creating change by way of the disappearing straight line of the bullet. And therefore, none of his clothes come off. He doesn't put any new ones on. There is no change within the wardrobe here. So the change in question is going to happen by way of the gun. Now, creation is symbolized by the disappearing white light ascending in the same way that semen, which is both white and transparent, ascends to facilitate creation. It disembodies from the flesh and blood Father, so to speak, in the form of Christ, to become the Creator, or God. So rather than using the penis of creation here, Oscar will reverse that, and his gun will ejaculate death. So Oscar goes through the wardrobe area, according to his version of events, and into the bathroom. He doesn't see an intruder, so he keeps moving his gun back and forth between the window and the closed toilet door. He hears a noise behind the toilet door, so he unloads 4 shots through it at a height consistent with not wearing his prosthetics. Now, again, remember what I said about the context of a barrier being protection? Look where Reva is at the time. Behind a barrier. She was protecting herself from Oscar, rather than him protecting her from an intruder. And once again, if the intruder was really in there and Oscar outside with a gun, then that intruder was trying to protect himself, which is why he was behind a barrier. Oscar, no matter the truth in this situation, should have had an obvious instinct that he had a very dominant position in relation to anyone who might be in the toilet behind the door. The person was a sitting duck. The result confirms as much. He speaks of a dire fear not consistent with reality. In this situation, if there is an intruder behind that door, you call the police or whatever is the equivalent. Furthermore, you convey verbal commands to the person behind that door, even if to just say that you have called the police. But Oscar goes in there and unloads on the door without any restraint whatsoever, and in a situation in which he has not identified a human being. He has not seen an intruder. Now, Reva is first hit in one thigh while standing, which causes her to drop, at which point she takes a round above one elbow, and finally, as she falls, two shots to the temple that, for all intents and purposes, cause her head to explode, something I'm not suggesting for the sake of sensationalism, but to point out that the Big Bang and a physically manifested rebirth isn't the singularity being torn apart into many pieces, but an actual brain. Now, what will happen when she falls is that she'll symbolically descend back into the abyss, only physically, meaning that the idea of Reva leaving Oscar becomes unrealized again, but in the worst way, because it's manifested. And by worst way, I mean the most tragic. So instead of going back down to the dark waters of the unconscious mind, being unrealized emotionally, she physically falls onto a toilet. She's left to rest there with her head, or the circle, on top of one of her arms, or the straight line, extending outward, showing a manifested version of the necessity of women's evolutionary ascension and the effort to escape the wrath of men, which is to make the circle turn into a straight line. So here you see Oscar obliterating the circle in the form of her head, and what remains in its place, extending outward, is the straight line. That's the reason for all of this suffering, so we always see it manifested in physicality to render the lesson that the transformation is literally paid for in blood through a conduit of disembodiment. Again, I know it's gruesome, but the value in understanding that her head was nearly blown off is that it constitutes physical extraction of the circle in favor of the straight line. So instead of emotional ascent, we get physical descent. Instead of shedding the body emotionally, the mind is extracted physically. These are the shortcuts of sociopathy. Now, since Oscar never checked to see if Reva was actually there in his story, he compensates later by saying that, after he fired the shots, he went back into the bedroom. He says this is the first time he realized Reva wasn't actually there, but in his story, he says he keeps shouting for her throughout. So if she never responded, and he never saw her, and never saw an intruder, then why the hell would he fire into the toilet? Anyhow, he goes back to the toilet at this point and tries the door. It's locked. He puts on his prosthetic legs and attempts to kick down the door to no avail. That's when he goes and gets a cricket bat, which is what? The straight line. And what's missing? The circle, or ball. It's a physically manifested way of saying that he extracted the circle in favor of the straight line. So, what probably happened is that he first tried to beat down the door, and since we know that cricket bat has to be akin to the straight line of disappearing light, the brand, which is written straight across it in very big letters, is laser. So what probably happened is that he first tried to beat down the door, and because that straight line was insufficient for transcendence through it, he went and got the gun. We make the more conservative move first, not last. So in his version he sells us, it starts with using the gun, then goes to the prosthetics, and finally the bat. But in reality, what probably happened is that Reva hid from him. He tried to kick down the door with his prosthetics, failed, and then graduated to the cricket bat, which also failed, and finally used the gun to kill her, or aka get through to her, giving us three acts of birth, life, death, followed by disembodiment, though since it's a tragedy, it doesn't end in deification, it's just death. This is when Oscar manages to find the key to the door while attempting to slide over the wall partition. Seriously, bro? He unlocks the door and sees Reva dead. Now, do you know how I talk about killers like the Hillside Strangler, Delphi Killer, or even BTK symbolically or literally taking their victims down the hill so that they may rise and ascend and remain at the top above them? Like we even saw with the stairs in the Michael Peterson case? Well, this is when Oscar picks up Riva's body, walks it down the stairs, and leaves it there at the bottom in a pool of blood. Like the Delphi killer takes the girls through the abyss of the creek before leaving them dead at the bottom of the hill in order for him to ascend and remain at the top, Oscar takes Riva through the abyss of the toilet and the bathroom and then leaves her dead at the bottom of the hill, aka the bottom of the stairs. In all of those examples, the victim lies in a pool of blood representing the red giant. It's literally what they died in. A red giant. In this case, specifically, Oscar losing his cool. And look where she is. Grounded. That's where women die in our evolutionary narrative, in order to give way to the disembodiment of the father through ascension. So Oscar leaves her grounded at the bottom of the stairs, specifically horizontal and bleeding, manifesting the suffering of Christ, while he ascends vertically in the manifested version of immortality as God, meaning not bleeding. Our vertical ascension necessitates abandonment of the x-axis on the coordinate plane, or Earth's surface, so he does that here, and specifically uses a woman because her XX chromosomes dictate redundant, grounded death, precipitating transformation to becoming the father above. So, we already know that he's just going to go back upstairs. The y-axis separates from the x-axis as it ascends, so to speak, and then, as that two-dimensional evolution across Earth's surface of height and width adds a strictly vertical component by going directly upward to space, the Y is abandoned for the Z, or vertical axis, indicating a three-dimensional evolution to follow. That's extraction of gender. Women get knocked off by men, who are then eliminated by default of that, meaning the XX and XY of male and female chromosomes respectively give way to non-binary designation of Z in AI, which is exactly why you just experienced Generation X, Generation Y, or Millennials, and now Generation Z as our virtual or dimensional transformation is finally underway. So that's why the father disappears as he ascends in terms of disembodiment, as depicted by the crucifix ending above Christ's head. Extraction of women, or the X, followed by extraction of the Y, or men, by default, leads to a virtual world of disembodiment, or Z, in which reproduction is replaced with replication in AI. So, Oscar ascends the stairs and disappears from sight like the y-axis of men. Basically, we see the x-axis removed, meaning Riva, followed by the Y, or Oscar, and when Oscar disappears at the top of the stairs or disembodies, it's the z-axis. The designation of AI symbolizes A1, or the plight to becoming the Alpha, or God, through immortality, which begins once we have completed the most recent phase of Z, our vertical ascension, which is why going to space and exploring it effectively requires becoming AI. Like the infinite loop works, each time you ascend, a new alphabet begins, and it works in conjunction with the color scale as an equivalent. So again, because the Nazis fueled our vertical ascension to space but remained grounded as the loser, their designation in the war was called the Axis, specifically not Z, Nazi. According to structural necessity, when Wernher von Braun, the godfather of NASA rocket science, a former Nazi, switched sides and took us to space, he was no longer a Nazi. That label had been removed, and our ascension quickly followed. But in order to do that, he couldn't be a not Z. Anyhow, there's a lot more to this case from a factual standpoint, and I encourage you to explore it. But what I wanted to cover here was the part that hasn't been examined exhaustively already, which is the psychological narrative, specifically how it relates to the projection of symbolism from our emotional world. In the end, Pistorius was found culpable for the homicide, though probably not to the extent that the punishment seems sufficient in the eyes of the general public, let alone Riva's family. Still, the truth is that, for someone who rose to the greatest heights and fell to the furthest depths, where he ends up, just like the rest of us, is right in the middle, trapped in a battle with a front line that's a barrier between the fleeting identities of what we've been and what we'll become, and knowing that the only way to ever reach the other side is to kill what we love.